pleased to introduce to you Aura Nadrich. Aura is the author of Says Who? How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. Aura is a certified life coach and a certified mindfulness meditation teacher. Aura, welcome to Mind Talk.
Hi, Pamela. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Aura, you know, as I was reading Says Who, it seemed like the beginning of your life was really the stuff that fairy tales were made of. You had a mom, you had a dad. Dad was hardworking, mom was hardworking. You had sisters and everyone was happy. You played, you had a grand time. And then things changed when your sister became ill, and it had quite the impact on you. Talk about that for a bit, if you would.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I grew up in what seemed like the perfect household. As a matter of fact, I would run into people from my childhood, and they would say, oh, I always wanted to live in your house. You know, you had four siblings, and your house was always so happy, and all of that, which is true. I'm the youngest of four, and when I was almost 15 years old, one of my oldest sisters, I have two older sisters and an older brother who has passed away, but one of my older sisters, who I just adored and idolized, had a nervous breakdown, and it was just shocking. It was devastating for all of us. It was just tragic, and I call that my original Says Who moment, when something took hold in my psyche that was really altering for the rest of my life, I felt. So that really was, yes, I did grow up in a very happy household, and, you know, sometimes things happen that we don't see coming, which is the case for our family, and it was quite devastating.
When you say your sister had a nervous breakdown, those words really mean very different things for different people. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of what was different for your sister? What changed?
You know, it's so interesting hearing you say that, because, yes, nervous breakdown, it sounds almost like, what does that really mean? That's a term that in those days, that was what they called it. A mental break, you know, yes, she had a breakdown, and her diagnosis from that breakdown was that she became mentally ill, and her diagnosis was that she was diagnosed as having schizophrenia, and it was really what, you know, the breakdown, when they reach that point where something is clearly wrong, that then you get the you needed, which is what happened to her, was what happened. It was a series of events that took place, and then one which just was, again, the mental breakdown that took place for her, and her diagnosis was schizophrenia.
And how did your life change at that point? I can't imagine that at 15 you even understood what was going on. Can't imagine that you really understood what schizophrenia meant, but you knew that your life was different. Was it at that point that you started thinking differently about yourself, or did that come a little bit later?
You know, there's nothing to prepare you for something like that. I think in any family where something goes really very wrong and is very troubling, you know, again, I am the youngest of four, so I was developing. My young psyche was really, you know, I was a teenager myself, and a lot of things were taking shape and developing in me. So to have a sister who had this breakdown, which was so foreign to all of us, you know, knowing nothing about mental illness, knowing nothing about, yes, you know, something like schizophrenia, which sounds so frightening really to me. The whole thing was, I describe it as a trauma. I mean, all the attention and focus was placed on her, rightfully so. She was in deep crisis. But as a result of what had happened to her, I was traumatized by it, because I was in tremendous fear over what happened to her. Do you know, I was heartbroken, and I was also terribly frightened by what had occurred with her. And that fear had produced a thought in my mind, which is what really was the beginnings, again, of the Says Who method, which was a thought that took place in my mind at that time out of fear, because we go into deep fight or flight, and that was that I'm going to go crazy like my sister. That's what I told myself out of tremendous fear.
And, you know, that's such a common reaction. And so many times, particularly in situations such as yours where there's, you know, no real expectation that anything like that exists in the family or can happen, it makes perfect sense that everybody would marshal all their efforts and their focus around the person who's identified it as ill, and everybody else in the family is just sort of left to kind of figure it out, not out of a sense of anything other than being super concerned about the person who's identified as being ill. And of course, the fear that this is going to happen to you next is so very, very common.
True, and I think that whatever takes place in a family structure, that, you know, that it can be so frightening and so overwhelming and so daunting that you do feel that it's going to spill over to you, you know, whatever that could possibly be in that household. With her situation, you know, without any neglect on my parents' part, you know, we all as a family unit, we went into therapy together. We had to learn how to then, you know, become a family with this big change in our home. You know, so many things were put into place and everybody was doing their absolute best. You know, in hindsight, again, because I was the youngest and I was internalizing so many things, that's why, you know, so much was not resolved for me at the time because I had my own stirrings going on. And again, yes, she was in deep crisis. And of course, all the attention needed to be placed on how do we then support and help her in the best way possible.
The value of questioning your own thoughts, which is, I would suggest, really at sort of the hallmark of the says who method that we'll be talking about today. You know, for so many people, the idea of questioning their own thoughts is something that they just don't think about. You know, you think how you think, and that's how you think.
Right. It's so true, and thank you for saying that. I think that's a really important thing to stress because I work with so many people, and I've had so many breakthroughs with my clients where they held a thought for so long that was so fear-induced, and when the questioning process, the says who method, was used on them, they oftentimes they'll say to me, you know, Aura, I never even thought to question that thought. I never even thought to question my own thoughts. We're so quick to question other people's thoughts and what they say, but we accept what we tell ourselves so readily without even thinking to question whether it's supporting our well-being or not.
And the idea that we can actually question how we think, you know, I probably send some people into a bit of a tailspin, in part because it is so foreign to how perhaps many of us tend to go through our days.
It's true. You know, self-examining, you know, it's very Socratic and very Jungian, living the examined life. You know, I've embraced those philosophies and those psychologies for a very long time, in that know thyself, you know, isn't that what Socrates said, and live the examined life, find out who you are. Now, I've had the great benefits of Jungian analysis because I went into that as a result of what happened to my sister. I knew that I needed help. I was starting to have symptoms related to the anxiety that was produced by the trauma that I experienced with her illness. And, you know, people walk around a lot of the time so really disturbed or really in discomfort or in despair or anxiety. And that's really the inspiration of the book. I wanted to help people who are suffering, but they're feeling, because feelings are always attached to a thought. And if you don't get to the bottom of what is really inciting those emotions and making you feel so horrible, you're always going to be at the effect of something you don't even know what it is. So finding out who we are is very illuminating. I know it's frightening to many, many, many people that want to avoid it at all costs. And that's really the encouragement that the Says Who Method is about, to help you understand your thoughts better so you don't suffer so much.
And one thing I'd like to underscore, which you've certainly brought up, is the idea that secondary trauma really is something that people experience routinely. I mean, it's a natural outgrowth of being human and being around people who experience pain, particularly if it's someone or if it's something that has a particular impact on you. So if you are if you have a sister or a loved one or a neighbor or something you see on television or listen to and it touches you in a particular way and you find yourself traumatized by it, the last thing you want to do, the last thought you want to have is, there's something wrong with me because I feel that way. Talking about those negative thoughts, you certainly don't want to do that to yourself. And let's talk a little bit about negative thoughts, because you make it very clear that something happens inside of us when we have those negative thoughts.
Yes, you know, we think thousands and thousands of thoughts a day. You know, statistics show that we think between 40 and 70,000 thoughts a day. That's a staggering amount of mental activity. And, you know, a lot of those thoughts that we have inside our heads can be disturbing, and they can be unpleasant, and they can be very dark. And you don't want to live like a prisoner inside your own mind. You know, you want to be able to examine, to go in there, to understand those thoughts better. So the Says Who method is a very straightforward questioning method to ask yourself when a negative or a fear-based thought comes up and basically just takes hold in your mind and you feel so imprisoned by it. You know, we have to have some kind of system in place. We have to have some kind of a discipline, a skill, if you will, so that when a thought comes up, it renders us just completely frightened or feeling so helpless and hopeless that we have to understand that we are the one that is producing and creating these thoughts in our heads. A lot of times people feel very disconnected from their thoughts. They feel as though something is taking them over. So by asking these very simple, straightforward cognitive questions about, you know, which you connect the dots, I have this thought, what is this thought trying to tell me? What does this thought mean? And you can begin to dismantle it. It's a type of structure, and I don't mean to have it sound complicated. It really isn't. That's why the Says Who method is so simple and so straightforward, to take those steps one step at a time, to be able to question a thought that's causing you so much unhappiness. You can understand it better, and you can realize that you are in control, meaning you can change it. You can transform that into a positive, constructive thought that does serve your well-being, as opposed to tearing you down and making you feel so horrible.
Now, you know that there's somebody listening who's saying, wait a minute, those negative thoughts serve a purpose. Those negative thoughts, maybe they're true. Maybe you shouldn't get rid of those negative thoughts. Maybe they are motivating. Maybe. So what do you say to those folks who believe that the negative thoughts are helpful and that it is unreasonable to try to get rid of them?
Well, okay, see, but that becomes, our thoughts become our beliefs. So if you have a belief that, well, my negative thoughts help me, and that's why those questions are so straightforward, being able to recognize that, you know, how are those negative thoughts helping you? You know, do you need negative thoughts to, in fact, motivate you? Why can't you switch it out to positive thoughts that make you actually feel better about yourself, that make you feel more empowered, that make you feel more proactive? Why can't those types of thoughts be your motivators? Why does it have to be something that makes you feel bad about yourself? Because if somebody can show me what those negative thoughts do for them favorably, like, for example, if you're saying, well, let's just say someone said, well, you know what, my negative thoughts, they motivate me to get out of bed. That may be very well true for that person, but that may be also part of your attachment, that your thinking has become habitual and that you've relied on a negative thought pattern to motivate you, which is, I'd be very curious to see how it in fact would motivate somebody. You know, we know what positive thoughts make us feel like. They make us feel pretty good about ourselves. And negative thoughts tend to make us feel not so good about ourselves. So if I were to choose between those two, I'd say a positive thought that says, yeah, I can do this, or I'm really good at this, and I'm going to show that I am, that really has an energy behind it, rather than, you know, I'm really a horrible human being, but I'm still going to get out of bed because I have to.
So
I think you can see the difference between those two.
It sounds like you're saying you don't have to be miserable to be proactive in your life.
Exactly.
What a concept.
Exactly. And we get attached to those negative thoughts too. So
we do. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will continue with Aura Nadrich, who is the author of Says Who, How One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. We'll be right back. You cited a statistic that we have 40 to 70,000 thoughts a day. So we're not going to start pulling through 40 to 70,000 thoughts a day. So how do you choose which thought to use the Says Who method on?
Well, when I said that we think thousands of thoughts a day, and that's a statistic that shows us approximately just the incredible amount of thoughts and activity that's going on in our minds, what do we pay the most attention to? We pay the most attention to the thoughts that stick around. That's what I say in Says Who. You know, our negative thoughts stick around. They're the ones that aren't going anywhere because they keep returning, or they get louder in our head because they really want our attention. They need our help. Do you know? So those are the thoughts that end up really staying in the foreground of our mind. And those are the ones that need our help. And those are the ones that I suggest to become more aware of when a negative thought takes hold in your mind before you react to it and become a slave to it, to begin the Says Who questioning process. And that will really help you catch that negative thought right in its tracks so that you can begin the process of changing it.
Give us an example. You talked about a client you had who actually was doing well in her business but had all kinds of negative thoughts that she would not do well. Can you walk us through the process that she went through?
Yes, that particular client really was I would say that was the doorway into the Says Who method. I hadn't written my book yet, and I was a life coach helping people, you know, and one woman came to me who, as you described, she was a very creative woman, and she came in to talk about a new business that she wanted to do. And in the midst of our session together, which, you know, based on what she was sharing with me, I thought it was going to be all about, you know, her creating this new business. And she said, you know, or I have this thought that's really frightening to me, and it comes up very randomly. It comes up out of the blue, and I don't see it coming, and it just terrifies me. And I said, okay, you know, what is it? Are you comfortable sharing it? And she said, yeah. And what her negative or fear-based thought, or what I also call a boogeyman thought, a thought that really just scares us so deeply, and she said to me, I have this fear that I'm going to be homeless, that I'm going to be penniless. Well, in that moment, I've heard a lot of clients tell me all sorts of thoughts that they had, but this one in particular really stood out for me, because here she comes to me very proactively wanting to start a business, and then she shares this thought which seems so incongruous. So I felt like I was in the presence of someone with two minds, one that was very proactive and positive and one that was very fear-based and about to paralyze her from moving forward. And what came up for me in that moment was, says who? It just came out of the blue for me. So I had a real aha moment when she said that. And I took a chance with her and I said, says who? Who said you're going to be homeless? And when I asked her that question, her eyes widened like saucers. And she looked at me like a deer in headlights. And it basically just short-circuited that fear, if you will. And she went, wow, I never even asked myself that before. I mean, she was so blown away by that question.
Interesting.
By my merely just saying, says who? Who said you're going to be homeless? And that really started a whole thing in motion when I asked her that very first question. And what came out of that was that she said, she got, you know, teary-eyed, and she said, wow. Okay, and I took it one step farther, and I said to her, have you ever heard someone say that before? Have you ever heard someone say, you're going to be homeless? You know, I was trying to connect the dots for her, and by doing so, those questions were really suddenly giving her some kind of a breakthrough. And then she got very emotional, and she said, you know, I grew up with a father that used to say that a lot, and money at times was difficult for us when he didn't have a job, or he'd have a job and things would be better, but he would say that with so much fear and so much anger that it used to petrify me. And so I said, okay, and so you're telling me that that was your father's fear thought, that he feared because money was scarce, that you were all going to be homeless and penniless. She said, yeah. And I said, well, did that ever happen? And she said, no. So you see the connection here, and I said to her finally, do you see how you have taken on a thought that didn't even belong to you? That was your father's fear-based thought, and here you are at this point in your life about to start a new business, and you have that thought as your own. This just was a major breakthrough for her.
It's powerful.
And also very powerful for me, because I knew by what I was witnessing in front of me that I was onto something very important, to connect those thoughts to our behaviors and to our beliefs, that we can take on someone else's thought and it becomes our reality.
For so many people, there is a fear of failure.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like what you're saying is it's a very reasonable question to ask yourself, where did that fear come from? How did mm-hmm. you learn to think that way about fill in the blanks, yourself, your project, whatever it is?
Right. Yes, because we do take on so many beliefs and so many things that were told to us. You know, so many of our negative thoughts and our fear-based thoughts, which is what happened to me, you know, carry over into, from childhood oftentimes into adulthood. So I end up seeing clients that have thoughts like what this woman expressed to me that didn't even originate with her, that came from a fear of her father's that she took on as her own. So we do take on so many fear-based thoughts that we believe, and they become a part of our core beliefs. And that we function from that. I mean, we function from our core beliefs. And they need to be questioned a lot of the time. You know, a lot of the thoughts that we that took hold in our minds many, many years ago have spilled over into adulthood. And we're still at the effect of those negative thoughts. And they can be changed at any time, which is why this method can help you break through that, like what happened with my client, so that you're not at the effect of something that is possibly going to be a very deep obstacle to getting on with your life. I mean, if she really were to continue giving into that fear, it could have stopped her from starting her new business. That's how powerful these negative and fear-based thoughts can be.
And
they become our obstacles.
And I would suggest that the less aware you are of them, the more harm they can do.
Absolutely, because what I talk about in Says Who is that you can start to feel the side effects or the symptoms of a negative or fear-based thought, which is what happened to me with my personal story. You see, I had that fear thought that took hold in my mind, and I buried it. And what started to happen is I started to feel anxiety, and I didn't know why. So people walk around with all sorts of things that they're, quote-unquote, feeling, and they don't even know why they're feeling it. You know, it's so important to connect the it's important to connect the thought that you might not even know what it is. That's why questioning and going deeper and being patient, it's going to reveal to you what you need to know, so that that thought that's causing you anxiety, that thought that's making you feel really angry, you can shine a light on that thought so you're not at the effect of it and don't ultimately become a slave to it and it starts to run the show of your life.
You know, talking about your own experiences and the way the anxiety began to show up in your life, you talk in your book about your longstanding wish to be an actress. And then at some point, you had an agent, which is every actor's dream to actually get an agent. You had an agent. You were acting. You were becoming more and more sought after. And rather than being fully excited and embracing that, you started to feel more and more anxious.
Absolutely. And that's a perfect example of what can take place, in that I didn't know that the anxiety that was building in me was connected directly to a fear thought that I had, which I had explained earlier, that I will go crazy like my sister. That was always this low-level thought. At that point, it was pretty buried in my subconscious, because I talk about that in Says Who. A lot of the times, a fear-based thought, or when we've gone into trauma, we can bury a thought, a fear that we have, and might not even know we have it, which is what happened to me in my case. So, yes, my anxiety started to grow and grow and grow, and I didn't know why. I didn't have a clue. Like, why am I so anxious all the time? Well, I was living in fear because I was gripped by a thought that something was going to happen to me that wasn't even based in reality. There was no proof that I was going to go crazy like my sister. There was no empirical proof. There was no professional, you know, diagnoses that, oh, you're anxious because of what happened to your sister. Well, it's going to happen to you. No one ever said that to me. That thought was merely created by my own fear. And that's what I want to emphasize. We tell ourselves all sorts of things that aren't true, and we believe it. And when that takes hold, that belief produces all sorts of things. Like for me, anxiety, and it produces things differently in everybody. And, you know, you want to get to the bottom of, you know, why am I feeling anxious? Or why am I angry? Or why am I so sad? You know, what is the sadness about? You know, we want to get to the bottom of our emotions.
And, you know, in fact, in terms of your acting career, the evidence you had was quite to the contrary of failing. You were doing well. You were sought after. So the evidence,
yes,
said that it was going to be great for you.
Yes, I was doing well. The more I was doing well, meaning more and more jobs were happening for me, what was happening along with it? My anxiety. So here again, here is one movement towards going towards our goals, from, you know, that which I talk about and Says Who. We have these goals, we have these desires, but if our thoughts can't support that goal or desire, it will cancel it out, even disturb it or disrupt it or destroy it. And that's what was starting to happen for me. My anxiety was starting to overwhelm my desire to reach that goal. So I was really in conflict, and I knew I needed help. And that's why this is so very important, because the very thing that you want can be so overpowered and overshadowed by what you're feeling, that you're not able to perform, that you're not able to deliver. I mean, there are countless stories of people that have unfortunately, you know, what they were going through emotionally sabotaged or destroyed their careers and their, you know, their trajectory towards success.
You talk about the importance of identifying, and I'm certainly paraphrasing, the truth of who you are as you shifted your path from being in the entertainment field to the path that you follow now professionally. Why is it so important to really get to the core of who you are as an individual?
Well, I think, you know, living the authentic self life, if you will, I think that, you know, within each and every one of us, I believe there is the true authentic self. I think we come into the world as these beautiful divine beings, and then we go on this life path and all sorts of things happen along the way. And, you know, if you are at all inclined to live a life that is wholesome and or spiritually satisfying, is to live a life of truth, to live a life of who am I really, so that you're not living inauthentically. And I think a lot of suffering comes out of that. And, you know, people may say to me, well, hey, I'm not going to just quit my job because I really ultimately want to go, you know, live on a mountaintop and meditate or pray all day. I'm a big believer in integrating into one's life. How do we live our most authentic self and be true to who we are so that we can express that joyfully and happily? For me, that's my life journey, and I want to help people along the way on their journey. And one of the reasons why I believe that the Says Who method is so important is that it can help you understand your thoughts better so that you can get to the core of your being, the truth of who you are, who your authentic self really is, so that you can live your life more peacefully, more joyfully. Do you know, that is the goal, to ameliorate suffering. You know, yes, life has its suffering, but it doesn't have to be all about that. You know, it can be very beautiful and very joyful along the way too. And, you know, this is what I'm trying to offer up to people with the Says Who method.
The phrase authentic self, we do hear it all the time. And I know that there are people who have 6,500 different understandings of what it means. Is your authentic self that thing that you wish you could do if you had $1 million? Is it the thing that you would do if you had 24 free hours and didn't have to worry? What exactly does it mean to be your authentic self?
I think it's all of those. You know, I think that the authentic self is, who am I right in this moment? You know, I'm also a mindfulness teacher, and mindfulness is about being in the present moment with total awareness. So who are you being right in that moment? Who are you being when you're driving in your car? Who are you when you're having a conversation with your coworker? Who are you when you're in conversation with your children? Who are you when you're in conversation with a loved one? Who are you in all the moments of your lives? I mean, I know it sounds like a tall order to live by, but the authentic self is in all the moments of our lives. It's not just about the what ifs. Well, I can only be real and authentic if I do have, you know, $1 million. I can only, you know, do this if I'm that. I can only do this if I lived here for, you know, I believe a type of happiness, a type of contentment, so that in those moments, you want to find the authentic moment within the moment that you're living in. Do you know what I mean? It's like you want to be as true and as honest to yourself in the moments of your life. So that you can say to somebody, let's say, where you're not feeling like you want to do something, you can communicate that with love. You know, I really don't feel that I want to do this. You know, a lot of people don't go along with their true authentic voices. And what happens is they do things they don't really want to do, which sometimes we can do in a compromised type of way. But there's times where we do things that we really don't want to do, or we give in to something, or we go along with something, or we allow for something that goes against the grain of who we are, do you know? And even if we ask ourselves those questions, do I really want to do this right now? Do I really want to say this to this person right now? do I really want to go towards this very thing right now that's being offered to me? And if you go against your truth, which might be, no, I really don't, but I'm doing this for that person. I'm doing this because I have to. I'm doing this because this person is bullying me. I'm doing this because this person expects this of me. You know, how much inauthenticity is there in your life? Do you know? Finally stand up and say, this isn't true to who I am. This does not call to the truth of my being. You know, and do it in increments. Try it on for size. See what that feels like to speak up for yourself. See what that feels like to say to somebody with kindness and compassion, you know, I love you, but I really don't want to do that. I love you, but I can't be with you anymore. You know, we can't live lies. You know, I think the way towards wholeness in ourselves is that, is trying to take each step one by one, living truthfully. And I believe that if we all lived like that, the world would be a much better place.
You know, I hear several things in what you're saying, including the fact that being your authentic self is not this huge, long, never-ending, forever-digging journey. It really can be who you are right now in this moment. What's the truth right now in this moment, which is sort of relieving to think about?
Well, it makes it much more doable.
Absolutely.
You know, if you could look at those moments, and, you know, when I talked about also childhood spilling into adulthood and talking about things that maybe even, you know, I work with clients that feel that they went into a particular profession because a parent wanted them to, you know, or they married somebody because they were expected to. You know, a lot of decisions are made, and then later on in life, you realize you didn't know. And by the way, we must be very kind and loving and forgiving of ourselves for any decisions that we've made along the way on our journey, because that is part of the, you know, what I believe the Says Who method is, allowing for the thoughts that come up in that moment and be kind to oneself. But yes, Pamela, I feel that, you know, looking at the moment that is right now, because the moment that is right now is unlike any other moment before it. So how can I help myself be most real and authentic right now? What happened, happened. That's the past. It cannot be changed. But what can I change in this moment that's happening right now, right this very minute? How can I make it different?
So it sounds like there's always an opportunity for hope, too. There's always an opportunity for change, which is affirming.
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. I mean, we can change. Who I am right now is different than any other moment that I've been before. Because again, going into mindfulness, this exists in the moment right now. I mean, you and I are having this conversation. We're in the present. We're here. We're right now. Nothing else is happening. You know, and that's the beauty of being in the moment and allowing the moment to happen and really celebrating it and allowing it to be, you know, positive and healthy and wholesome. And, you know, that's the beauty of being able to change, you know, something, again, going back to the negative, to the positive, that you can always change. And, of course, to be hopeful. You know, there's that great saying, change is constant. It's always happening. Nothing stays the same because we're changing. And I like to, with mindfulness meditation, I sometimes have people lay down and look up at the sky and look at the clouds. And I say, look at the clouds. They never stay in the same place. They're always moving. And that's, I think, a great metaphor for our thinking mind. Thoughts come and go, and we can change a negative thought and change it and transform it into a positive one. We have the ability to do that.
Aura, we're going to take a break. And speaking of change, and when we come back, I'd like to go more into the process, into the Says Who process. Folks, we'll be right back. You stay where you are. We'll be right back. I'm looking at the Says Who process, and of course, number one, it's a 7-step process. Number one, 7-question process. Number one, of course, is Says Who. Number two, have I heard someone say this thought before? Take us through the rest of the steps.
Well, question three is, do I like this thought? One of my favorites. Very straightforward. And all these questions, you'll find they're very simple, or so they seem. They're very direct, they're very straightforward, but they really can go in deep, you know, to find the logic in the thoughts that we have and sometimes how illogical they can be. So a question number three, do I like this thought? You know, what is it about your negative thought that you like? Because, again, basing this on negative thoughts primarily, you know, those are the thoughts you want to question. Do I like this thought? What is it about your negative thought that you like? You know, you're pretty hard put to answer that. You know, I like that it makes me feel bad. I like that it makes me feel like I'm incompetent. You know, there's so many things that you could fill that blank with. So do I like this thought? There's really not a lot that's likable about negative thoughts, I feel personally. And I use that thought. I use that question readily when the thought pops up in my mind that I need to question. The fourth one is, does this thought make me feel better? Again, very straightforward. How does your negative thought feel make you feel better? Do you know? Does it make you feel good about yourself? Does it make you feel like you can get your job done? Does it make you feel that you are functioning as a likable human being? Does it make you feel secure? You know, again, so many negative thoughts do not make us feel good about ourselves. The fifth question, does this thought work for me? How does it work for you favorably? How is your negative thought working for you? Is it helping you get your job done? Is it helping you in your relationships? Is it helping you feel confident? You know, is it working for you to get the job done? Is it working for you to get ahead? Is it working for you to be on the track of success? Do you know, how is that negative thought working for you? We know that positive thoughts make us feel better and that positive thoughts work for us favorably. Sixth question, am I in control of this thought? So many people, they feel out of control with their negative thoughts. Well, that's really what it ends up feeling like, because you've given so much power and energy to a negative thought that, by the way, you're creating in your own mind, and that you need to take that control back. You need to take that power back. So when you feel ultimately that you are not in control of that thought, that's an indication of how powerful a negative thought can be when we give into it so readily and accept it as true. The final question, number seven, do I want to keep this thought or let it go? When you've asked yourselves the prior questions, identifying it by, you know, who have you heard say this thought before, that it didn't originate with you. Maybe it did start with somebody else, and you now know that it's not your original thought. You don't like this thought. It does not make you feel better. It does not work for you favorably. You do not feel in control of it. That when you ask yourself the seventh question, do I want to keep this thought or let it go, that you are ready to say, yes, I am ready to let this thought go. I do not want to keep it.
Now, let's look at number seven for a moment, because I know somebody is saying, well, of course I want to let it go. So how exactly do you do that? You've had this, whatever the thought is, let's say you've had it for 10 years. So you've gone through all this work, and it's almost taken on a life of its own, this negative thought. So you want to let it go, but it just kind of keeps creeping back in there. I mean,
and it will.
What do you do?
And it will, and I say that. You know, I didn't write a book that's just a quick fix, like, you know, oh, let's just think positive and positive thoughts. Well, you know, positive, positive, positive will just keep on happening all the time. That's not real. These thoughts will come in like little tricksters, like little imposters in our mind. You know, I mentioned that again in Says Who, that, you know, if a trespasser came onto your property, you wouldn't say, oh, hey, come on in, help yourself to whatever you want. Negative thoughts can be like imposters and trespassers. So you want to be able to recognize when that negative thought comes in. What this will help you do is identify it when it comes up so that you can look at it. And I also talk about being the observer oh, there's that negative thought again that wants to bring me down, make me feel bad, tell me how horrible I am. I'm on to it. I'm on to you, thought. I know what you're trying to do. You see, you want to be able to have some kind of a system in place so that you can be on to the negative thoughts that want to wreak havoc with you and want to disrupt you, your life, do you know? So, yes, they will come back in, and they'll try to come into the back door of your mind, this way, that way, whichever way, it'll come up when you least expect it. Boom, there it is again. What are you going to do? Are you going to go say, oh, hey, trespasser, come on in and help yourself to whatever you want? Or are you going to say to this thought, you know what, I don't like you. No, you don't work for me. No, I don't want to keep you going on in my mind, feeling like you've got control over my mind, because you don't. You have to answer back to those thoughts. And then you take it one step farther, which I have something in place called the release and replace, where you say, I'm going to release that thought that I'm a useless human being, or I'm unlovable, or I'm unworthy, and I'm going to replace it with, no, I am lovable. I am worthy. I do deserve this. And, you know, again, your subconscious takes orders from you. What you tell yourself gets stored in your subconscious. So what do you want to tell yourself? You want to replace that negative thought with a positive one, and it becomes your belief. And this is, you know, there's all this talk now, which I love. I'm not a doctor, a scientist, or a neurobiologist, but all of this about neuroplasticity and the way we open up new pathways in our thinking mind, I really believe in. Because if you default to a negative place and you start to support it with positive thinking, you will start to default to a positive thought. It's like building mind strength. Do you know, this takes discipline. It takes, you know, practice. And people will say to me that I've worked with for a while, oh, my God, I'm so much less of a negative person. I don't default to the negative anymore. Yes, it'll come up occasionally, and I know what to do when that happens. I know how to zap that negative thought and expose it for what it is.
So it sounds like they actually like themselves better.
They do. They do. I want people to be on to their own thinking mind and know what to do, how to navigate the waters. Sometimes they're calm and sometimes they're choppy. And you got to be a good sailor. You got to know how to deal with both types of extremes, do you know? So those negative thoughts will come up, but you want to know what to do when that happens. So you can know how to let it go by changing it out, and by transforming it, and by changing it into a positive thought that you do like, that does make you feel better, that does support your well-being, and that you are in control of it.
How do you turn a negative thought into an action thought?
Well, negative thoughts turn into action thoughts just fine on their own, okay? Negative thoughts, when not questioned and not changed, you become what I call in the book a reactor. That's why I really encourage, I talk about it in Says Who, how to become an observer of your thought as opposed to a reactor. So that when a negative thought comes up, rather than just to react to it willy-nilly or just a knee-jerk reaction to saying something to someone that's really hurtful or mean, I even cite road rage in my book, that somebody cuts you off in traffic, and what are the things you tell yourself? Oh, what an idiot. I'm going to go after them. That's a negative thought in action. That's a negative thought that isn't dealt with properly. That's a negative thought that's going to get you into trouble. You don't want that to happen. Conversely, you want to go, when the negative thought comes in, someone cuts you off in traffic, what an idiot. Okay, was that nice? Are they an idiot? Okay, they did something that was foolish. They did something that was thoughtless. And by the way, you can tell yourself that. I'm not going to take that away from you. If you want to call somebody an idiot in your own mind, please do. Go for it, if that's really what you want to say. But you want to observe where that's going to take you, because that could take you down a rabbit hole.
It's true.
That could get you into a lot of trouble. And if we're more mindful, we can say, oh, that person, okay, that was really either stupid or sloppy or thoughtless or whatever you want to say, do you want to go after them? Is that really a smart thing to do? No, it's not. And that's where you start to work with a thought so that you're not at the effect of it, that you're not being controlled. Because you will be controlled by a thought, for sure, especially a thought that has a lot of energy around it, especially a thought that has a lot of emotion around it, like anger. You're going to be just, you know, you're going to be like a dog being walked on a leash, you know, going here, going there. A thought tells you to do this. It tells you to do that. Do you want to live like that?
One of the things that I hear you consistently saying is that with consistent, gentle, in-the-moment awareness, you can, because you have the power to make a choice to do something different, to actually change not only the quality of your thoughts, but the quality of your life.
So well said, Pamela. Thank you. Yes, for sure. Do you know, look, we're all going to say things, and we're all going to have those negative thoughts turned into action. And if we can be more mindful, even if, you know, once those words leave our lips, that's it. They roll out of our mouth and we've said something to someone that's really hurtful or really mean. And even if we can catch it, the whole goal here is to catch this faster, to become more aware, to become more mindful of our thoughts and what do we want to do with them and do we want to act on them. And so even if you say something to somebody that wasn't very mindful, you could say, hey, you know what? I'm sorry. I said that really abruptly. I said that really meanly. I said that very short-tempered. That person's going to look at you like, wow, thank you for that. This is really what I wanted to say. And then you can say it differently to somebody. Do you know, we have that opportunity. We have that opportunity not only with ourselves but with others. Even when we say horrible, mean things to ourselves, which we do, we can have a nasty inner critic that says all sorts of terrible things to ourselves. We can catch that faster and go, hey, whoa, wait a minute. No. I don't want to call myself an idiot. I don't want to tell myself that I'm a worthless this and a worthless that. You catch it faster. And then you could say, today I'm going to tell myself that I am worthy. Today I'm going to tell myself, or in this moment of today, I'm going to tell myself, I'm lovable. And even if I don't really feel it deep inside, by my telling myself this more and more, that will turn into a belief. And that belief will become who I am. And I would rather be that person who believes that I am lovable rather than the person that tells myself I'm horrible and I'm worthless, and then I become that person. Who would I rather be?
And, you know, in being more mindful of yourself, of what you're saying to yourself and believing about yourself and doing with and to yourself, you're also modeling for other people what's okay for you.
Right. Exactly. And that's really important, too, because we do set the standard and we do set our benchmark. And we do, you know, we can raise the bar at any given moment about who we are and who we want to be. You know, that's the beauty of mindfulness, is that who I am right now in this moment is who I have never been before. And that is my truth. You know, this is who I am right now. And I find that to be so, so inspiring, that we can become who we really desire to be at any given moment in our lives. We can begin now. Do you know?
So a first step for someone is what? Is it to ask the question, says who?
The first step, which I go into in Says Who, is that it's a very, very big step to even begin this questioning process, because what that really means is that you're willing to change those thoughts that are causing you unhappiness. Do you know, that's why it's such a great commitment to make to yourself, to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to own this thought. And that's really what the very first question is. Says who? Who is saying this thought in my mind? Who is telling me that I'm unlovable, that I'm unworthy, that I'm this and I'm that? To be able to answer it and say, I am telling myself that. You know, so often we want to deflect, we want to push down, We want to push away. We want to pretend that we're not having these thoughts that we're having. And let me tell you something. Everybody has those thoughts. You know, nobody needs to feel the shame and the embarrassment. Everybody's had mean, unkind thoughts along the way, be it about themselves or about someone else. So taking that first step, says who? Who is saying this thought in my mind? I am. I am owning it. I am owning the very thing that I'm telling myself. So that is the very beginning. That is the first step. I do go into says who, how to teach you how to become the observer. And that, again, becomes a practice and a discipline that when a negative thought comes up, you'll catch it. Ah, here's that negative thought. Let me look at it. What's it about? What's it trying to tell me? Okay, let me really be with it. Let me let it come up so that I can look at it more closely. And you begin to start the process of dismantling it, of changing it, which will ultimately go into transformation. You know, that you are that powerful. You will become that good that you will know what to do when the thought comes up.
Or
it is not serving your well-being.
What's a website that folks can go to get more information?
AuraNadrich.com, AuraNadrich.com.
Terrific. AuraNadrich.com. Terrific.
Yes.
Aura, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing Says Who with our audience.
Thank you so much for having me.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. It's available to you on demand by going to myndtalk.org. That's mindtalk.org. You can sign up at the iTunes store, or you can download the Mind Talk app from iTunes or Google Play. There are lots of places to get Mind Talk. And I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to Mind Talk. So send me an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. Again, that's MYNDTALK.ORG. And I want you to remember always, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. Take care.